I treasure this. Thank you so much. And you've been sober as long as I have. You tend to. I've lost 3 sponsors because they've gone to a better place, a bigger meeting, and I've been gifted with a beautiful sponsor now. I came today, and I never know what I'm going to say. I have no idea. Today I had these flowers delivered to my house, and they're really pretty flowers, but there's something inside the flowers. They were flowers that my dad loved. My dad got sober in our family. He was the first person to get sober. I grew up in this really dysfunctional family, and if you look in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous in the back, there's a chapter called Freedom from Bondage. It talks about the mental twists that lead up to our drinking happen long before we ever take our first drink, and that happens to me because of the way my family was. I was a sick family, and my dad got sober, and it kind of happened to have this trickle-down sobriety thing in our family because of him. And that bouquet had his favorite flower in it. And my house smelled beautiful today, and all I could think about today was my father, and how if it wasn't for him, I don't think I'd be standing in this room today. And he was also a man I couldn't stand for a really long time in my sobriety. So it was really interesting today that I had such beautiful feelings for a man in a period of my sobriety that I used to really couldn't stand. So I don't know where that's going, but if you're new, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. If this is your first meeting, holy cow, welcome to AA, a speaker meeting. I remember my first meeting was a conference, so it was kind of wild and out there. And yes, I did get sober at 19, and the only recovery home available to me was up in Folsom, California, where everybody just got out of Folsom prison. So, think about that. You know, fresh out of high school, guys just out of Folsom. So, you know, it was kind of fun. And what I found out there is that these big macho dudes were the best teachers of my sobriety. Is I had to learn early on in my sobriety to listen to the similarities and not the differences. I for sure was going to drink again. Because, one, I was young. Nobody in the whole town of Auburn was sober as young as I was. There was no young people's AA in that town. I didn't know it existed until I found Sacramento, California. And thank God when I found young people's AA, there was people that were sober younger than me. And I got kind of jealous. I went, fuck. A little few cuss words there, but, you know, I couldn't believe it was like a 12-year-old with sobriety, you know. I'm like, dude, how can you do that? I thought I was young. But young people's AA saved my life. Yeah. I feel kind of scattered right now because I kind of wanted to share about how I got here, but I also want to share about what it's like now, and it doesn't seem like there's enough time to do all of that at once. And so I guess I'll just have to pray about that real quick. I have my phone with my big book in it, so I'm not looking at text messages or any of that kind of stuff. So I just thought I'd let you know. And I hear in AA, you know, you got to work the steps and the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you're new, you're like, what the F are the steps? And what the heck are the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous? And what are the traditions that we read? I remember all that, how I felt about that. And my main thing I really hated about Alcoholics Anonymous when I first came into Alcoholics Anonymous was the God stuff. I really didn't like that stuff. I left during the Lord's Prayer. And I just didn't like it because I was raised in a religion I wasn't too thrilled with that I thought was hypocritical. And coming from in a very abusive home, I didn't believe God was protecting me. And if there was a God, how come he didn't keep me safe? You know, and I started drinking young. And when I started drinking young, it took the pain of the abuse away. It was like a magic elixir. And I found ways to drink. I would put alcohol in milkshakes at school. I would put, you know, right on, I told him I could do it. You know, I was an athlete. I would take the time to inject oranges with vodka. And if anybody got near my oranges, they were, except if they were my partying friends, they were cool. But nobody could touch my oranges. And they knew I would hurt them if they got near my oranges. So at halftime, I would have my vodka oranges at halftime. I don't know how I got through my sports career half drunk. Or drunk, half drunk. I was drunk, you know. And I was really bummed out that I couldn't have oranges in basketball season. That really pissed me off. I couldn't figure out how to get any kind of alcohol in during any other sports but soccer. Soccer was a great sport I could get alcohol in. But one of the principles, when I came into AA, I was so naive. I remember they used to say, you know, work this clean house, keep your house in order, and all this kind of stuff. And I didn't know that meant working the steps. I thought that meant literally cleaning your house. You know, and I can't stand cleaning house to this day. I really don't like it. You know, so it's like, I gotta clean my house, like make my bed. And but you know, that is part of it too. It's part of being a grown up, but part of not being sober is paying bed, make my bed, going to work, paying my bills, growing up. And I literally grew up in Alcoholics Anonymous. I saw a photograph of me my first 30 days of sobriety and what I look like now. And it is like, I look like a 10-year-old and how I am now. It's so bizarre to see how I've changed over the years. But I haven't just changed physically. I wish I was as skinny as I was in 30 years. But I've changed so much emotionally, and I've more than anything have changed spiritually. I no longer am afraid when people talk about God in AA. I am not afraid to talk about God in AA. Because I have some major spiritual experiences in here that are so profound that they're hard to talk about. I can try to explain to you what my God relationship with my God is like, and it'd be like me trying to explain to you what a fresh picked nectarine is like. You know, it's crispy, it's sweet, it's fresh, it's refreshing, but you've got to eat it to know what I mean. So you got to work the program to know what it's like. You know, you got to get a sponsor, go to a lot of hell of meetings, and you got to really be honest. It says it in the first paragraph of how it works. Rarely have we seen a person fail or slowly fall in our path. You know, and the ones who aren't honest are the ones that don't stay sober somewhere in there. That's how unperfect I am. I don't remember that honesty sentence in there, but I bet some of you know what it says about honesty. But the thing that I was thinking about recently is the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous to me is the God factor of Alcoholics Anonymous. Is honesty. That's one of our principles of Alcoholics Anonymous. Another one, I'm cheating, I'm looking at my phone, is hope. That's another principle of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I came into AA, I was hopeless. I don't know about any of you guys. I don't just roll into an AA meeting just for fun of it. You don't come in here because, hey, I want to check this stuff out. I came in here because my life was miserable. I lost everything. Emotionally, financially, relationship-wise, my life was hopeless. So in AA, one of the principles we get here is hope. It's a magical thing. And I got faith in Alcoholics Anonymous. I also got courage here. And with each one of these principles that I'm mentioning, they all correspond with a step. I also got something called integrity. I had that looked up in a dictionary. I didn't know what the hell that meant. I didn't know how to read when I came into AA. You know, and that was humbling. You know, you get these things they give you, and you have to say those big-ass words like anonymity and autonomy and things like that. I didn't even know what they meant. You know, and at half the time, couldn't even say them. So learning to read in AA was one of the biggest gifts I got here. See, I'm going all over the place. I hope you can keep along with my mind, because it's like that. It goes back and forth like a ping pong game. Another principle of Alcoholics Anonymous is willingness. And I had that from the day one when I walked in AA. I may have been a brat. I may have driven my sponsor absolutely nuts. But when she asked me to do something, I did it. If she asked me to write my journal, I did. If she asked me to write my journal about my day and what happened during my day, if that meant I thought she was an ass or a bitch that day, I wrote that down. And you know what? I had to meet with her. And I had to read it to her. And her name was Mary, too. And I was going, oh, God, Mary, guess what I wrote about you today? If I'm Mary, you are a bitch. You know, and I would read it to her. So that would create honesty. That also helped prepare me for step four. Because this was the person I shared my fourth step with. And by the time I was sharing all this other silly stuff with her, all these little resentments I would get about all the jerks I met in AA, all the people I thought were listening, all the people I thought were talking smack. You know, all the judgments we have here in AA, we all have them. Why, heck, we have them right now. I bet everyone in this room has judged somebody in this room today. You know? And, heck, I have. You know? Then there's the willingness I talked about. Then there's humility. I can't believe I can read this without my glasses. This is pretty cool. Step seven is humility. And that's a hard one, but it's I can't even, I don't even know what the description of that can be. But it's one of our principles of Alcoholics Anonymous. Step eight principle is brotherly love. What a cool principle. Look at us, man. We're sitting in a room. And if one of us needed help, I guess one of us would help each other out. I bet all of us would reach our hand out for each other. I think that's pretty cool. I don't know half of you in this room. And if someone needed help in here, I would help you. You know, I would care enough. It says that in Alcoholics Anonymous, for another alcoholic is suffering, the hand of AA is always to be there. And that principle of brotherly love is so spiritual and so powerful that it has saved my life more times. I think that principle, more than anything, has kept me from drinking, has saved my skin in AA more than any principle I can think of. Justice is the one on step nine. You know, we kind of clean up our past. Number 10 is perseverance. Step 10 and step 11 is spirituality. And step 12 is service. And, you know, sometimes I think these principles aren't necessarily in the order of the steps. I think the principles happen in different order. Sometimes I might have service on day one. I might be serving coffee. I might just shake someone's hand or just hug them. That's a form of service. Just being in a meeting is a 12 step. You know, being here tonight, listening or just being here is a form of a 12 step. Because we don't do it like we did 30 years ago. We used to go on wet calls and, you know, with your sponsor, another person in AA, and try to get someone sober. You know, so we have to try different forms of it, of doing the 12 step. And that's one form we do it. When I first worked the steps at Alcoholics Anonymous, I laugh at myself. I learned to laugh at myself in Alcoholics Anonymous because, you know, you just have to, you know. Some of the stuff I've done is so stupid, it's funny now. If you laughed at me then, I would have hurt you, but, you know, it's funny now. But I was doing my fourth step, and, you know, I was living in that home with all those guys from Folsom, and they had some great stories, you know. And I just got out of high school. I was a good athlete. I had some scholarship offers. I had some crappy grades, you know. I sold some cocaine, did this and that. I went to the powdery substance or whatever. But, you know, part of my story. So I didn't feel like I fit in. So I was writing my four-step I was taking some from this wholesome prison person, this, because, you know, we lived together for 90 days. I know everybody's story in that place. So I had his story and this person's story and this woman's story from other some prison nearby and blah, blah, blah. And then I went to the oldest AA meeting in California, which happened to be up there. And all these old timers, someone coming like me now, and I used to think they were so old they farted dust. I just couldn't stand the old timers. And someone was talking about this principle of honesty and willingness. And I said, here, I'm supposed to do my fourth step the next day. And I go, this is a bunch of bullshit. It's not me. So I'm crying. And my sponsor comes up to me. She goes, what's wrong with you? You know, she was not a nice person. And I said, I showed it to her. I go, can you figure out who's who in this book? Because it's certainly not my fourth step. And she went through. She goes, oh, this is this person, this is this person, and this person. And I did my fourth step within a week when I finally, because I was hurting so bad that I did my own story. Was just as painful. I had so much incomprehensible demoralization that's talked about in the big book that I didn't have to have your story or your story or your story to fit in here. My story fit just as fine. You know, it was just because I was so young that I felt like I had to do that. It's kind of funny now to think back about it. And the sad thing is that I can't call her now today and say, do you remember when I did that? Maybe I can call her on as an angel. Do you remember when I did that? I am grateful that I did my fourth step. I was done my fourth and fifth step by my ninth month of sobriety. And one of the hardest things on my ninth step were the people that I felt injured me more than I injured them. The people that sexually abused me. Why the hell do I owe them amends? They did me wrong. It was really, really hard for me to make amends to people that I felt harmed me more. You know. But I made amends to certain people. And there are some people that I did not make amends to because it would harm me. But like I made amends to some people in my family who harmed me. Like my father was an AA and he was one of my people that harmed me. And he didn't make amends to me. It was a competition. You're an AA, and you haven't made an amends to me. He should make amends first. That was my attitude. But I wasn't going to get anywhere in this program if I was going to wait for someone else to make amends to me, because it was about my forgiving them and me moving on with my program. And holding on that hate and poison in my body wasn't doing me any good. They didn't even know I was so pissed off at them. They were just living their life, having a good old time, and I was so angry, you know. So that poison, I was just killing myself with it. So what I find in the ninth step, it was a gift to myself. You know, most people forgave me. And the people that didn't forgive me, I probably deserved it, to be honest with you. And the person that I didn't put on the list, that my sponsor goes, you know, you have someone on the list you haven't added. And I go, who's that? And she goes, it's you. And that was a hard one to swallow. You know, how do you make amends to yourself? You know, and I still continue that practice today. One of the ways I continue to make amends to myself is to come to AA, is to be kind to myself, is to be as honest, practice the principles that I just talked to you guys about as much as I possibly can. You know what? I can't do it perfectly. I have fucked up. Excuse my French, English, Spanish, whatever you want to call it. I messed up. I have hurt people in AA. I've hurt people's feelings in AA. I've been a horrible sponsor at times to people. I've been a bad person in AA. You know, we don't do it perfect. And I know that. And the nice thing about AA is that you can clean that up. Is that you can you can clean up the wreckage of your sobriety just as much as you can clean up the wreckage of your past, you know. And since I've been in AA longer than I drank, I have a lot of wreckage of my sobriety. One of the things that some of you guys that don't know me yet from Adam, there's been three times in my sobriety where I've been completely paralyzed and in a wheelchair. And I was, oh, this is the perfect opportunity for me to drink. Perfect. You know, I can't walk. I can't feel my legs. This is a great excuse. You know, not once during those times of my physical challenges did I ever even think about drinking. Not once. And the beautiful thing about the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous, it talks about brotherly love, they brought meetings to me in the hospital. Some people came every day. Some people I don't even know. I'll never be able to thank. What a cool thing. They 12-stepped me through the most painful time in my sobriety. Was not knowing, unknown, am I ever going to be able to walk again? Well, it's obvious I'm here walking, right? And AA's walked me through so many deaths, and it's unbelievable. Because you know what happens when you stay sober long? Life happens. You know what happens when you stay sober a day or two? Life happens. Relationships are in your life. You know, I argue with my spouse. What do I ever, you know? And the way I learned to practice my principles of Alcoholics Anonymous is more in my home life than I do here. Because I can look pretty damn good in Alcoholics Anonymous, but where it really matters is at home. And one of the hardest things I've had to do this year has watched my mother almost die three times this year. And I've been taking care of her since then. And when I made amends to her almost 30 years ago, it was a verbal amends. And it was one of those, is there anything I can do for you? You know, and my mom, well, you're just sober, just stay sober. That's all I ever want you to do. I just want you to be happy. You know how moms are. I just want you to be happy. So part of being sober is something called a living amends. So it's now it's my responsibility to suit up and show up for her. Because I was mean to her when I drank. I was not the nicest daughter. And when I stood up and showed up for her and she needs something, it brings so much joy to her life. And it's such a simple act of kindness. And I've been working on some resentments lately at other family members who are supposed to be in AA. They are in AA. And they're not suiting up and showing up, and I want to kick their ass. To be honest with you, I'm really angry at them. You know, I'm really angry at my brothers who aren't showing up, and they live so close to her, and I live so much farther away. So I still have to work a program on resentments, because it says in our book, resentments is the number one offender for relapse. I don't want to drink again. And if I continue to have these resentments at my family, I will drink again. Because I'm only like, what, one arm length away from my next drink. I'm that close. It doesn't take that long for us to drink. I remember, I think I was about 2 years sober. I was going to Fresno Fellowship, and they had a really bitchin' birthday meeting, you know, it was a good meeting. It was like a million people got chips, and their sponsors were giving their chips, and people were talking, you know. And I had an AA high. You ever leave an AA meeting, you're like, that was like the best AA meeting in the whole damn world, you know. You're like so excited about it, you know. And then I'm driving home by myself. I was too young to drink legally in bars, but I did drink in bars. So I pulled up into it. I never drank in Fresno, not from here. Pulled into a bar on my way home before cell phones, and I ordered a gin and tonic. And all of a sudden, this, I don't know what it must have been, God. It came on the bar. And all of a sudden, I turned around and I went to the payphone and I called Mary. and she's still in up in Auburn, and she never, this is a woman who never, ever answers her phone. It's always her answering machine. And she answered the phone. I go, oh my God, I just went, I came from the birthday meeting, and this is the best meeting in the whole world. You know, I went crazy in AA, you know, and I just went to a bar, and I just ordered a drink, but I didn't drink it. Why did I order a drink? I don't understand. Why did I order a drink? She goes, because you're an alcoholic, you jerk. You know, that's exactly what she said. Like I said, she wasn't that nice. That one wasn't as nice as my other one. But she was what I needed at the time because I was a teenager brat and I needed someone to keep me in line. And I knew people's phone numbers before these magical things right here memorized. And I would highly suggest that you do that too, because the power can go out on these. Your battery might go dead. You know, something might happen. And you might have an experience like I did, and you might need to call your sponsor or someone in AA. You might want to have a phone list in your wallet or something like that, because it was my only defense against the next drink was that phone booth. I don't even know if they have phone booths anymore. You know, find a phone, memorize a few phone numbers. You know, it was the only thing that saved me, but it was like a God, it was a divine intervention. It scared the living crap out of me. But it was, I don't think, if she didn't answer the phone, I'm sure I would have drank. But, you know, I haven't drank in the last 30 years. But I've had moments where I go, my Mike's Hard Lemonade? Damn, I wonder what that tastes like. You know? Well, you know what? Truthfully, you want to know the truth? I never drank for the taste. I don't know about you guys. I drank to get drunk. I drank because I hurt so bad inside that I wanted that pain to go away. And I, when I got drunk, I did things that were kind of like against my moral code. You know what I mean? And then the next morning I would wake up a little bit feeling yucky. Like, that moral code was going, whoa, you did that? Why would you do that? And it talks about that in the doctor's opinion about, you know, about that vicious cycle of addiction and this thing that we do, the shame cycle, I call it. I would wake up in shame. And the only thing I knew how to get rid of shame's a feeling of, it's not guilt. Like, guilt's like, oh, I better fix it. Shame is, I'm a horrible being. That's what shame is for me. And the only way I knew how to get rid of shame, what? I drank again. So I had this cycle going on for such a long time, you know, and I ended up losing the love of my life, I thought, at the time, because we were supposed to announce our engagement party, and then, excuse me, I'm going to go just like a few seconds off topic, off AA topic. I went to a party because a kilo of cocaine came into town. I thought that was more important. So cocaine versus engagement party was much more important to me. So I'm saying nothing was wrong. There was nothing wrong with that thinking in my mind. Nothing was wrong with that thinking. That was logical thinking to me. Don't understand. I'll get there sooner or later. I showed up a couple days later. You know? He wasn't too happy. I had a nosebleed. I was tweaking. And I saw how much I was hurting him. My mom, his family came out from Philly. And I saw the pain I was causing people. It was the first time ever I saw how much I was causing people pain. And I also lost my home. You know, sleeping out of a car, you know, like my Pinto. Pintos, you remember those? My first car was a Pinto. I'm proud of that thing. I paid for that myself. But if I could get a message across to anybody, you don't ever have to drink again. The person that I already, see, my marriage spells are horrible to this day, but the person, this is your first day sober, you don't ever have to pick up a drink ever again, ever, never. You know, is possible. It says it in the book. If you read the book, we will recoil from alcohol as from a hot flame. It says it in there. It says it in there. I kind of believe it. But it says that in order for that to happen, we have to stay in fit spiritual condition. Well, I'm not in fit physical condition. That's for darn sure. But I'm working on it. But I have a connection with God that is most amazing. One of the things that happened to me that opened my mind up. First, I'll share, everybody that knows me knows that I was very angry, like I'd mentioned earlier, at my relationship with God. And then my sponsor at the time said, "Mary, you must believe in God because you're so angry at God." And I wrote in my journal that, damn, pissed me off. I was so mad that she confronted me that I must believe in this God. So, and you can't have a feeling towards something if you don't have belief in it. That made me so mad. So my belief system began with anger. And I said the F word of God in so many meetings just to see how many people would get pissed off. That's how I behaved in meetings, and they put up with me. I was a little jerk. I don't know how they put up with me, but they deserve purple hearts, all of them. And then something magical happened. I was getting ready to go to a young people's dance down in Sacramento. I was getting the makeup on and doing my hair and putting my pumps on. You know, I used to wear those, Nora. I used to have those, you know. And since your boys are here, I won't call them what I used to call them in front of you. But, I was getting ready to go get some action at the dance, let's just say it that way. So, and I was living with this little 5-year-old little girl whose mom was absent. She was an absent heroin addict alcoholic. She was about 5 and a half or 6 and still not potty trained, but she was very smart. She was putting on my makeup as I was putting on my makeup. And I had an assignment from my sponsor, and I had to look in the mirror and say, "I love you." And every day she would ask me, "Mary, have you said I love you?" And I went, "Oh, yeah." I was lying. "Hell no, I ain't doing that. I'm kidding." And I would look at my eyes in the mirror, like if I caught my eyes in the mirror, like a rearview mirror, I would think about it, but I couldn't get the nerve up to say it. Because how can I love myself? I hated myself when I came into AA so much. So this little girl, her name was Lauren. I said, "Lauren," I go, "you know, she's got her hair, I mean, you know, the mascara is everywhere, the blush is everywhere, lipstick on everywhere." I said, "Lauren," I go, "look in the mirror and say, I love you." And she looked in the mirror and she got this most intense look on her face and she said, "I hate you, Lauren." And it blew my mind. I go, "Why?" And she told me that because my mommy's never here, there's no God. Everything I felt, there's no God. How could there be a God? And every reason why I hated God. And then I just started talking like what I've been hearing around the rooms to try to make her feel better. Because she was hurting so bad. So I faked it. I just said, "Crap, I didn't mean to believe," to her. I said, "You know, well, if you love yourself and you love God, you know, blah, 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 blah." I just said stuff I didn't believe. And this little girl started to do this. And she's kissing the mirror. I go, "What are you doing?" She goes, "I'm hugging myself." And then she's kissing the mirror. And then she's going, "I like you, Lauren." She started with "like." And then she goes, "I love you, Lauren." And then she hits me on the arm and she goes, "You do it." "I haven't done it." And I'm like, "Now I have to do it." God works in mysterious ways. That was my first spiritual experience in Alcoholics Anonymous, was God working through that child. Because that kid had absolutely no resistance to change. None. Zip. Listened to the message. Heard it. Click. Got it. Boom. Boy. It was fast. you know. And I've had so many other messages like that in AA that I could go on at infinitum at the messages that I get now today. But that was my biggest, as Oprah would say, aha moment. But that was a big deal for me. After that, I started calming down. I didn't start saying F God in meetings anymore. I started looking for the beauty in other people and seeing God in other people. That I started believing that God meant group of drunks and God meant good orderly direction, and that when I saw the face of another person, I saw the face of God. And that was a huge change for me, and it shifted overnight. I can't explain to you. It had to do with working the steps and this kid and this sponsor I had. And it has stayed with me ever since. It was a magical thing. I've had some other major magical things. Be careful what you pray for in Alcoholics Anonymous, because you just might get it. I've had some very magical experiences happen in AA, and they've all had to do with something spiritual. Just as an example today with the flowers. How on earth would that nursery know that that flower would happen to be my dad's favorite flower? And how on earth, and all day long it smelled like him. And if it were for him, I would not be in this room. To me, that's a God thing. Totally God. Totally. You know. So, thanks to the person who sent me those flowers. You know. But they didn't know. So there are many messages here. Every single one of you in this room is healing my heart today. Because life is just challenges us still, you know. Because we've been sober a long time doesn't mean life doesn't still hurt. And what I'm grateful for is that I still get up, sit up, and show. You know what I did this morning? I was talking to my sponsor on the phone. He's like, "What are you doing?" I'm picking up dog poop, and then I'm going to play fetch with my dog. You know, and then life things, and talk to my mom, and it's like I started thinking just normal everyday stuff. But those aren't the kinds of things I wouldn't even be responsible for. I would let the dog poop pile up for like 10 weeks if I was drinking, right? You know, church room white. Yeah, jeez. Oh yeah, I don't even know if I'd pick it up. Let the long guy do it if I had one. So, I'm so sick. Anyway, I want to thank everybody for being here tonight. And thank you for being all the newcomers for being here, all the in-betweeners for being here, every single old-timer for being here. Everyone in this room, thank you so much for 12-stepping me and being here. And if nobody has told you that they love you today, I certainly do. Please stay. I'm going to hear keep coming back, but just stay. Just stay. That's how it works. Thank you.
Mary. New Valley Group encourages sponsorship and service to our fellowship. We invite you to come early and stay after the meeting to get better acquainted with our fellowship.